You ever feel overlooked? Like the people around you maybe don't really appreciate all the things you do for them. It's not that they don't care at all. It's just they don't really say thank you very much. Or perhaps you can relate to, you know, moments where you realize you've overlooked some of the people around you, all the things that they've done and all the things that they mean to you. I think if, you know, Christmas is one of those times where there's so much going on, it's just really easy for those things to happen. If you're that that mom or that grandma, that, you know, that spouse that you've spent the last 4 days in the kitchen because there's a big family gathering coming up, you probably understand what it's like to feel overlooked. You're that breadwinner and you've been working in the salt mines or slogging it out in the cubicle or wherever it is that you do what you do, so that you can bring home a paycheck and you hear your kids just asking for more. You probably understand what it feels like to every now and again feel a little overlooked. Well, today we're in a series actually called It's a Wonderful Life, and I want to look at some of the themes, biblical themes, in the classic movie It's a Wonderful Life. And in the clip we're about to see, George Bailey, he's kind of the hero of the story. Well, he's asking for help from the rich guy in town, Mr. Potter, who kind of owns almost everything and it kind of takes advantage of people because he's got money. And he's kind of grinding George down for all the things that he doesn't have and trying to make him feel like he's insignificant. And so as we watch this clip, I'd like you to kind of think if you've ever related to moments a little bit like this. So just watch.
I need help. Through some sort of an accident, my company shortened their accounts. The bank examiner got there today. I've got to raise $8,000 immediately.
Oh, that's what the reporters wanted to talk to you about.
The reporters?
Yes, they called me up today from your building and loan. Oh, there's a man over there from the DA's office, too, who's looking for you.
Please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, won't you, please? Can't you see what it means to my family? I'll pay any sort of a bonus on the loan, any interest. If you still want the building and loan, I'm...
George, could it possibly be there's a slight discrepancy in the books?
No, sir, there's nothing wrong with the books. I've just misplaced $8,000. I can't find it anywhere.
You misplaced $8,000?
Yes, sir.
Have you notified the police?
No, sir, I didn't want the publicity. Harry's homecoming tomorrow.
Yeah, you're going to believe that, Willie. What have you been doing, George? Playing the market with the company's money?
No, sir, I haven't.
Oh, is it a woman, then? You know, it's all over town that you've been giving money to Violet Bick.
What?
Not that it makes any difference to me, but why did you come to me? Why don't you go to Sam Wainwright and ask him for the money?
I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
Well, what about all your other friends?
Well, they don't have that kind of money, Mr. Potter. You know that. You're the only one in town that can help me.
I've suddenly become quite important. Well, what kind of security would I have, George? Have you got any stocks?
No, sir.
Bonds? Real estate? Collateral of any kind?
I have some life insurance. $15,000 policy.
Yes. How much is your equity in it?
$500.
$500? And you asked me to lend you $8,000. Look at you. You used to be so cocky. You were going to go out and conquer the world. You once called me a warped, frustrated old man. What are you but a warped, frustrated young man? Miserable little clerk crawling in here on your hands and knees and begging for help. No securities, no stocks, no bonds, nothing but a miserable little $500 equity and a life insurance policy. You're worth more dead than alive. Why don't you go to the riffraff you love so much and ask them to let you have $8,000? You know why? Because they'd run you out of town on a rail. But I tell you what I'm going to do for you, George, since the state examiner is still here. As a stockholder of the building and loan, I'm going to swear out a warrant for your arrest. Misappropriation of funds, manipulation, malfeasance.
All right, George. Go ahead. Go ahead. You.
Why, George Bailey, you are worth more dead than you are alive. Why don't you go to that riffraff you love so much and see if they'll help you? So George feels very insignificant. And as the story goes on, if you've seen the movie, a spoiler alert, a little bit later on, he gets a picture. I don't know if it's a dream or it's a vision or an alternate universe. I mean, thankfully it's fiction, so we don't need to worry about what that is. But of a world without him. And he's able to see, maybe for the first time, just what an impact his life actually has on the people around him. And it's only after George is seriously contemplating leaving that picture through his own death that the people around him really see just how significant George has been to them all along. But in the experience of life, the regular everyday stuff, George is overlooked. He overlooks his own significance, and the people around him overlook his significance. And to a certain degree, I think that's true for all of us. We tend not to say thank you. One of the reasons why, you know, memorial services and funerals, they're important, is we have some moment to gather and actually say some of the things about a person's significance and their life that very often we don't say to them face to face. It's not because we don't think about it, right? Or we don't care. It's just life is busy, and there's bills to pay, and there's kids to raise, and bacon to bring home, and we just don't really get around to it. And so we overlook one another. I hope you say thank you, but I'm sure for all of us, none of us can say thank you to each other quite enough. Well, as much as we overlook each other, as much as we often feel at times overlooked, I want to look at an issue in Scripture that I think we probably overlook even more. Today, we're going to be in the book of John. You heard some of this passage read by Cindy and Chris a little bit earlier with the lighting of the Advent candle. But in your Bibles or your app or wherever you find God's Word, I'd like you to turn to John chapter 1. And we're going to be reading through the first 14 verses. And I just like the significance of what's being taught here to sink in, and then just spend a little bit of time with that truth, okay? So John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was what? God. So John, he's the writer of this. He's one of the disciples of Jesus. It's later on in life, and he's reflecting on the significance of all the things that he's seen happen as a result of Jesus. And so he's using kind of this philosophical, you know, Greek language to describe it. So it's more poetic, perhaps, than you or I might use. But let's keep reading. He, the Word that was God, he was with God in the beginning. Through him, all things were made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent by God whose name was John. Here he's probably referring to John the Baptist, not so much himself. But John, he came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, though the world was made through him. The world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, Children born not of natural descent, not of human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. In verse 14, here's where we're going to park for a while. The Word became what? Flesh. The Word. So the Word that was God, God became flesh. God took on skin. God became human and made his dwelling among us. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory. We have seen it, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. I was reading this week how astronomers, as they study the universe, they say that the observable universe, or at least the part that we will ever have hopes of seeing through any means, is at least 100 billion light years across. I mean, think of how fast light travels. However fast light travels over not just 1 year, or not just two, but 100 billion years. We're one little planet in our solar system, and there are thousands, tens of thousands of solar systems in our galaxy, the Milky Way. And in the universe, there are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds or millions, we don't know, of galaxies in the universe. God is that big. Just wrap your head around that for a moment, if you can. I mean, these are distances we can't hardly fathom in size. It's just beyond human comprehension. God is that big. And through him, all things were made. And then the scriptures dare to tell us that God, who is that big, the one that put the stars in place and solar systems and star clusters and supernovas and pulsars, would become this small. So small that if we could see it with an electron microscope, a single fertilized egg, it would fit on the head of a pin. You could barely see it with the naked eye. God that big would become that small and float around in the womb of a teenage girl. Big idea. The scriptures tell us that God did that because as he looked at the universe, however many planets and solar systems and galaxies there are, who knows? Well, he knows. He saw our planet and he saw our human race. And he saw the rebellion in our own hearts. And saw how we, because of that, were headed for our own destruction. We were bringing about our own death, our own physical and our own spiritual death. And rather than let us go our own way, rather than let us just kill each other off, he intervened. He didn't just say, "Oh, here's some instructions. Hope it goes well. Stinks to be you. Try harder." He said, "I will go." And he became human. He took on human flesh. Lived a sinless life like that none of us could live. And then through his death and then ultimately rising from the dead. He atoned for that which that separates us, that puts us out of sync with God, and gave every person, every human, the opportunity for new life, both life now and in the afterlife, the life to come. Made that possible for every person through Jesus Christ. That's what the Bible teaches us. That's the miracle of Christmas. This, the doctrine of the incarnation of God become flesh. God become human out of God's love for the human race. Big idea. So as we kind of put these ideas together, this idea of overlooked, I'd like you to consider that maybe, and this might come across as like, oh, what are you talking about, preacher? I don't get that. I'd like you to consider that maybe the most overlooked person in all of history is Jesus Christ. Now, I can understand there'd be some pushback. You go, wait a second. Haven't we like named, you know, universities after his followers? And I mean, you go around and like every hospital, it seems, has got a saint something, you know, in part of its name. I mean, this guy gets a lot of press. We've given almost the entire month of December in honor of his birthday. I mean, this is a guy that's, I mean, you know, he gets a lot of airtime. How could he be overlooked? But just roll this around with me. Just like in that movie where George had to imagine his town without him. Imagine with me for a moment, if you would. Imagine our world without Jesus. I mean, the Bible tells us that God became flesh, born Jesus Christ in a manger. What if he didn't? What if he hadn't come? What if God chose not to get involved in human history in this way? Imagine a world without Jesus. What year would it be? I mean, we mark time by the birth of Christ. I mean, sure, we come up with some way of calendaring, some emperor, some king, somebody would, you know, wipe out a whole bunch of people and in honor of his own victory, change the calendar. We'd be living in year something of something. Some Caesar maybe. Some military conqueror, some great politician. You know, every president, we change the calendar. I don't know. What would we do? Imagine a world without Jesus. Without Jesus, would there be, you know how all these different hospitals, they get named after followers of Jesus, St. Paul, St. John, St. Timothy, all. Imagine if we didn't have any of those. There'd probably be hospitals of some sort. Maybe. Would there? Because most of them were started by people that got this crazy idea from Jesus that people matter. Not just because of their productivity or what's in it for them or what's in it for society, but people matter because they matter to God. I mean, would we live in a society of the Darwinian survival of the fittest? And so, you know, all those who can't really meaningfully contribute, if you're crippled or you're too poor or you're too stupid, we just kill you off for the betterment of the human race. Think of it, the atheistic empires of our time, that's exactly what they do. Imagine a world without Jesus for just a moment. I mean, with a world without Jesus, would anybody inspire people like William Wilberforce in Great Britain to petition, and along with others, for the abolition of slavery, to do that right thing, though it was very politically inexpedient? What would give him the courage to do that in a world without Jesus? Or in our own country, the courage of leaders like Abraham Lincoln to do the right thing, though plenty of his advisors at the time, in the time of the Civil War, say, hey, if you do away with slavery, our economy will collapse. Oh my goodness, our economy will collapse if we don't have slavery. And rather than do what was easy, he did what was right. Would, in a world without Jesus, would anything give people like that the courage to do something like that? I don't know. The Puritans who came across the Atlantic Ocean to try to found a country where they could worship freely. And through their influence and influence of others, the first secular democracy. I mean, we were not founded as a Christian nation, but we were founded by Christians. They invented this amazing idea that all men are created equal. So we all have a say. We all have a voice. We all have a vote. Imagine a world without Jesus. Would any of that be there? I don't know. Of the 208 universities first founded in the United States, 108 universities, 106 of them were Christian, founded by Christians for the sake of the gospel. Or New England, where those first Puritans formed and settled, that was where we had the first public schools. Before then, if you wanted to get educated, you better have a rich daddy, because poor kids don't deserve to go to school. We can't even imagine that, can we? Imagine it. Imagine a world without Jesus. What would we have? What would we be left with? I don't know. I don't know. Now, we love all the things that Jesus does for us. We love all the benefits of Jesus. But I think oftentimes we forget where those benefits have ultimately come from. The societal ones. But today I'm not just here to kind of talk, you know, world history and politics. Though I would love to, because I'm geeky and I just think that stuff is cool. And I hope you do too, at least a little bit. Here's the bigger thing. Imagine if even at Christmas time, you know, as our world celebrates the birth of Christ, imagine if we as Christians actually missed it. And I'm not talking about, you know, getting ticked off at Walmart because somebody forgot to wish you Merry Christmas. I mean, that's small potatoes, folks. I mean, we shouldn't be upset that somebody that doesn't know Jesus neglects Jesus. We should get very upset if those of us who do neglect Jesus. Here's the bigger questions. Here's the ones I hope you will take to heart. I hope I'll poke at you just a little bit. It's Christmas time. Your house is filling up. There's lots going on, right? Do you pray? Do you seek God through His Word? Do you say, Lord, even in the midst of all this busyness, even in the midst of all this activity, I want to see You. I want to see You. That promise of God come to earth, Emmanuel, God with us, it's not just an idea in history. It's a personal encounter. It's for you. The greater risk in Christmas is that those of us who have heard the story of Jesus, who know what He did, that we would miss it. Because there's so much to do. There's so many things going on that we would just miss it. I want to show you one more video clip. This is an illustration, okay? Because I think this might be some of what we do to Jesus. In the clip, there's a violinist. His name is Joshua Bell. He's one of the best violinists in the world. And after he had played at a major concert hall in Boston, I mean, the cheap seats were more than $100 a piece, and it was packed. They, as part of a social experiment, he went and played in a subway in Washington, D.C. He had to come in a special car because he was carrying a $3 million violin. And he stood by the door and he played. And this is actually security camera footage of that event. And I want you to consider, I mean, just as people are walking by this violinist, is this the same kind of way at Christmas time we treat Jesus? Just watch. The violin is on the left-hand side, if you can see it. And the hour that he played there, about five people stopped. And he made $15 in tips. So there's a tremendous... I mean, did you see that? There was that one woman. I mean, the whole crowd is rushing past. Everybody else is busy. Everyone else is just trying to get to the next thing, whatever their next thing is. And one woman stopped. That one woman with the little white bag. And listened to the music. Your life is probably busy. Service is going to get out in just a few minutes, and you're going to whoosh off to whatever you do. I hope it's wonderful and filled with joy and family and feasting and happy memories. The question, Christian. Now, if you're not a Christian today, you can disregard this if you need to. But the question for you, Christian, if you're a follower of Jesus, is in Christmas, will you see Jesus? Will you look for him? To pray? To pause? To just assume that in every moment of every day, somewhere behind it, God is there. And to look for how he's leading you. To seek him in the midst of Christmas. Or will you just rush past? So as we close the message, I'd like us to have a little time of silence. And this might be the start of real Christmas for you. Just a time of silence where just you and the Lord to pray. Maybe say something like, Jesus, I want to see you. I want to see you this Christmas season. I want to see you in my life. Even better, add a K to that. I want to seek you in Christmas. And maybe this is a new thing. You know, maybe this biblical claim, God come to earth to die, to rise for our salvation. And maybe today might be a day for you to even, if you've never taken that step, is to take that first step of saying, Jesus, I want you in my life. I believe you came not just because of history. I believe you came for me. You didn't just die for human sin. You died for my sin and my forgiveness and my new life. And I want that. So however you're led to pray, let's just take a moment and the worship team will come up and then we'll join in worship and join in some song. But just before all the kafuff, just take a minute and pray and pause and see Jesus. Lord, thank you for the Bible's promise that you came into the world as a baby for our salvation. Lord, hear the prayers of your children. Hear the hearts of your children as we call out to you.